Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Today's podcast is titled, Will Federal Government Debt Destroy the Dollar? First recorded in 2024. Host Dennis McQuestion is joined by David Walker, former U.S. Comptroller General and head of the Government Accountability Office, for a discussion about America's mounting fiscal crisis and federal debt as it reaches $34 trillion and threatens the nation's economic future. Walker emphasizes that the real concern isn't just the debt amount, but the debt-to-GDP ratio, which stands at 120%, and is projected to reach 192% within 30 years. We hope you enjoy today's episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
When Ronald Reagan took office in 1981, the total direct federal debt accumulated since 1789 was less than $1 trillion. Today, that debt is $34 trillion on its way to $50 trillion. The annual interest is quickly becoming one of the largest expenditures, especially with higher interest rates today. So why did this happen? Who is to blame? How will this impact you? What can and should be done? And if nothing is done, what is likely to occur? Now, joining me to discuss these issues is the former head of the Government Accountability Office, David Walker. Dave, we've been through this on more than one occasion. You were the Comptroller General back in the day. You're the one of the co-founders of No Labels, which is the independent party movement. You've been on our program before. Tell us how big the problem is and what caused it.
Well, Dennis, it's good to be back with you. I mean, basically what I try to focus on is not the annual deficit, not the current debt, but how much debt as a percentage of the economy, which is the debt burden, and how much interest do we pay as a percentage of the budget? And both of those are very troubling figures. In order to win our independence from England and assume all the debts of the states, we had 30% of debt to GDP. 100 years ago, we had 30% of debt as a percentage of the economy. Today, when you count the debt to the, held by the public and also the debt owed the trust funds, it's 120%, so four times what it was. And it's headed to 192% in the next 30 years if we don't change course.
All right, let me stop you 1 second there, Dave. And I'm going to put up graphic number one, which is one that you use from the Peter G. Peterson Foundation. It's a federal debt to GDP from 1793 until 2053 with a projection. And that's exactly what you're talking about, am I right?
Exactly. You know, we're going from where we are today to 192% of GDP in 30 years, absent a change in course. That's third world nation status. We must not let that happen.
Okay, so what caused all this, David? I'm fairly certain that our viewers are pretty doggone smart about all this, but you end up with government debt as a result of what actions that are taken or not taken.
Well, human nature is that people like to get as much as they can get as long as somebody else will pay for it. We end up now having predominance of career politicians, where it's their job rather than a temporary position that they would have and return to the real world. They want to get reelected. Nobody wants to lose their job. And so therefore, if you combine that fact with human nature, then people want more government spending and low government taxes. The combination of that is deficits and increasing debt burdens. The other thing is, Dennis, quickly, is we've lost our sense of stewardship. Stewardship means that you don't just leave things better off today, you leave things better positioned for the future. And we've lost that, in particular in the 21st century.
Well, I would love to argue with you, David, but that's a very difficult thing to argue against. I'm going to put up another metric that you sent, and you call it it's graphic number two, the different fiscal metrics. You talked about the debt as it relates to GDP, but there are several other ones on this graphic. And I'd like to ask you about one of the things that you just mentioned. A lot of people talk about the debt as the debt held by the public and then the total debt. Would you explain to that viewer what it is, and that viewer needs to be aware when they see stuff in the news, whether they're using the total federal debt or just the debt held by the public?
The debt held by the public is everything other than the debt that we owe to the so-called trust funds, Social Security, Medicare, highway trust funds, and other trust funds. And at the end of fiscal 2023, which was September 30, the debt held by the public was about 98% of the economy. But when you count how much we owe Social Security, Medicare, these other trust funds, it's about 120% of the economy. And the total debt, which includes the debt held by the trust funds, is what's subject to the debt ceiling. And as you know, Dennis, the debt ceiling has been a dismal failure in controlling the growth of government and mounting debt burdens. But we're the only major country that has a debt ceiling denominated in dollar terms, and it really has failed miserably. You know, candidly, there's a lot of misinformation about the debt ceiling. Some people argue that if we violate the debt ceiling, we will default on U.S. treasuries. That's not true. If you look at the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, there's only one thing still guaranteed by the Constitution from a financial standpoint, and that's U.S. treasury securities. If we ever hit the debt ceiling for real, what would have to happen is you'd have to cut other government spending and or raise additional revenues. You don't have an option but to honor U.S. treasury securities and related debt. And so what people haven't wanted to do is make the tough choices on spending and revenues in order to regain control. And that's what we have to do.
All right. I'm going to put up a graphic that is, scary might be the way to look at it. But it is the it is graphic number three. And it has to do with the deficits that we've run. But the Mises Institute came up with this. It's a deficit since 2015. The annual deficits, this is the one year at a time we've spent more than we've taken in. And I'm not going to cover every year, but in 2015, we thought maybe $436 billion negative. That was a deficit, was a lot. But in 2020, it was $3 trillion. And in just the last year, 2023, $1.695 trillion deficit. Now, those things scare a lot of people, but a lot of people can't get their arms around what $1 trillion is. So I'm going to give them this definition, Dave, and this is mine. And if you take $1 trillion and I take you, Dave, back to the year one, and I give you $1 trillion, does that sound like a good idea?
I take it anytime I can get it, Dennis.
Okay, good. There are strings attached. Here's the string number one. You have to spend $1 million a day for your whole day, every day of your life. Is that okay? Can you spend $1 million a day?
I think it'd be hard, but I do my best.
You'll try it. Okay. And condition number two, you have to pass what's left on to your heirs, and they have to spend a total of $1 million a day for the rest of their life. Is that okay?
Sure, I'm sure they'd be fine with that.
They'd be fine. The third condition is you cannot invest it at interest. In other words, it's just got to be either in gold or a savings account or whatever. And those are the three conditions. Now, if you and your family did that for 2,023 years, you would still have over $200 billion left from that $1 trillion.
I think they'll be okay, Dennis.
But last year, this government of ours spent twice that amount in deficit. So that's the problem. It's so huge that, I have a hard time getting my fingers and mind around it, to say the least.
We actually spent $1.7 trillion in deficit last year, but we spent more than what you talked about, more than double what you talked about in interest alone.
Exactly right. In interest alone, that's exactly right. Now, you have a graph that you sent me on interest cost and the projections. I'm going to look at graph number seven. And this, again, is the Peter Peterson Foundation from 2007 up to today and then all the way through 2015. You've got net interest cost almost 40% of revenue by 2053. Can that be true?
We can't allow that to happen. And by the way, that's net interest. So that doesn't count the interest that we pay to Social Security and Medicare and the other trust funds. And when you end up counting that interest, we're already spending more on interest than national defense. and it's the fastest growing expense for the in the budget. And what do you get for it? Nothing.
Nothing. You get nothing. And therein lies the problem. Now, I'm going to look at one other graph that I have, and I got this from John Malden, who's been a guest of ours several times. And it is a chart that I want you viewer to look at. It is the world budget deficit by country. We're not the only country, Dave, that runs deficits. Am I right about that?
That's correct.
And so on here is China, Japan, India, UK, Italy, and then all of the others. The United States in 2023, the total deficits of all the world, we ran 42.29% of them. So we're supposed to be the bastion of free markets around the world and all of that, yet all the deficits in all the countries around the world, ours was 42% of the total. Does that scare you as much as it does me?
Well, it does, because we only have a little bit less than 25% of global GDP. So basically what that's telling you is we're continually spending more money than we're taking in, and we're growing the deficits faster than the growth in the economy, and that's not sustainable.
No, and you have a graph, this is graph number four I'm looking at, which is the gap between spending and revenues. And you have the gap that shows what has been done since 1988, but then you've got the projection on through 2053. And if I read this graph correctly, Dave, you're saying to me that if things don't change, the deficit is going to significantly increase even more than it has. Am I right about that?
That's correct. I mean, basically, the Congressional Budget Office, which is the nonpartisan party in the legislative branch for scoring purposes, estimates that we're going to have revenues of about 18% of GDP. Spending is already about 25% of GDP and going up. So the difference between that 7% and growing is a deficit, and that results in mounting debt burdens. And then with higher interest costs, you can see that things could spin out of control very quickly. Over 70% of annual spending is so-called mandatory spending, meaning it's been set by law and we've essentially written a blank check for it. Things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and a variety of other social welfare programs. Interestingly, the amount that's subject to annual limits, the so-called discretionary spending, includes every express and enumerated responsibility envisioned by our nation's founders in the Constitution: national defense, homeland security, federal judicial system, Congress, president, etc. So, and by the way, those numbers, Dennis, don't count the tax expenditures, the deductions, exemptions, credits, and exclusions, the revenues that we lose due to those preferences, which essentially is backdoor spending. So when you combine those two things, the Congress only controls about 15% of annual expenditures. Now, how can you call that a budget? How is that a budget when you're only controlling about 15% of your annual expenditures?
Well, you have an accounting background, obviously, and then the job that you had as Comptroller General. You know more about that than just about anybody else, but it seems to me that even though they only control 15%, so to speak, I'm not sure that Congress ever puts together a budget before the fiscal year starts anymore anyway, do they?
During my lifetime, 72 years, the Congress has passed timely appropriations bills by the beginning of the fiscal year four times. That is an F minus.
Well, I'm sure that the viewers watching this who are Republicans would say it's all the fault of Democrats. And I'm quite sure that the Democrats watching this would say it's all the fault of the Republicans. Who's right?
Well, I'm a political independent, and the answer is both parties are to blame, and there's not a party of fiscal responsibility today. And I might note that neither one of the major presidential candidates seem to be fiscally responsible either. They also don't seem to want to solve the problem with Social Security. They say they're not going to touch it. Well, that means there are four, a 20% plus cut in benefits in 10 years, because that's what you get by doing nothing. Doing nothing is not a viable option.
Well, this is the thing I think disturbs a lot of people, and especially those folks who watch this program and want to keep up with these things, is the idea that both of these candidates you know, it's, do they call Social Security the fourth rail of politics? Is that the right one?
Or third rail.
Third rail. Third rail. Okay, the third rail of politics. They don't want to touch it. But when you say that benefits have to be cut in 10 years, what exactly causes that to have to be done?
Under current law, you can only pay Social Security benefits from the assets that are in the so-called trust fund. And I actually call it the trust the government fund, but that's a different story. That trust fund built up surpluses over a number of years, but now we're paying out more than we're taking in. And so the trust fund is being drawn down. It's expected to go to zero by 2034 on a combined basis. And when that happens, there's a 20% shortfall between how much has been promised and how much in revenues, payroll taxes primarily, that you have coming in. And since you can only pay benefits from trust fund assets, it means an immediate cut that would increase over time, absent reforms.
All right. So knowing that both political parties are going to have to solve this problem, or else they'll both lose politically, they have two choices, actually three choices. They can either do what, or do the combination of what to solve the Social Security issue itself.
Well, Social Security is not that difficult. I mean, we can reform it and exceed the expectation of every generation of Americans, because young people don't think they're going to get it, and they're wrong. Seniors think they're going to get ripped off, and they're wrong. And so what we can do is we can look at whether or not we need to further increase the normal retirement age gradually on a prospective basis, whether we should significantly raise the taxable wage base cap, the amount of wages and self-employment income that's subject to Social Security tax, as we did during the Greenspan Commission reforms, whether we should modify the benefit structure to provide somewhat higher replacement rate for low-income individuals and somewhat less for high-income individuals. So these are some of the things that you could do, and you can make it solvent, sustainable, secure, indefinitely. But we also need to think about adding a supplemental savings account on top that the individual would own and would have the ability to invest it in a limited number of, let's say, pooled investment options like the Federal Thrift Savings Plan to get our savings rate up.
Okay, good. So that one, at least you can see some of the solutions to that. And I think that solution will come about politically, even though knowing how the government works, it probably be at the last minute, who the heck knows. But the bigger problem, the bigger deficit problem, is another matter. How is it possible to raise enough taxes or cut enough spending to actually get us to a balanced budget? Or is it possible to do that?
Well, first, we don't really need to have a balanced budget. What we need to have is a plan that will get debt as a percentage of the economy down to a reasonable and sustainable level over the next 10 to 15 years and have mechanisms in place that will make sure that it stays that way. And in order to do that, you're going to need several things. You're going to need a statutory fiscal stability commission. We can come back to that. You're also going to need a constitutional amendment, because there's nothing in the Constitution that constrains the ability of expressly of the Congress to spend more and take on more debt. 49 of the 50 states have some constitutional constraint on fiscal issues. We need it at the federal level as well.
All right, you were kind enough to provide me with, this is graphic number 8, which you called a three-pronged approach to restoring fiscal sanity. Stop the bleeding, stabilize the patient, cure the disease. So why don't you sort of expand on those three, and let's see how much we can cut while we're talking on this program.
Well, first, stop the bleeding means that we need to cut, I mean, an absolute reduction, fiscal 2024 spending as compared to the bloated levels of 2022 and 2023. Spending, federal spending, increased 40% between 2019 and 2023, a 40% increase in 4 years. And this is post-COVID. COVID has been declared to be over. Yes, there are a few people that still get it, but the pandemic is over. So that's the first thing. That's stop the bleeding. The second thing is we need to stabilize the patient. That's where we need a statutory fiscal stability commission that will engage the American people with the facts, the truth, the tough choices. Everything is on the table, but not everything is equal. And then make a package of recommendations with regard to spending reductions, revenue increases, budget reforms that will be guaranteed an up or down vote in Congress. And well, the third
now,
is.
Now, wait, before you get to the third one, let me stop you there for a second. I hallucinating, or didn't we have something called Simpson-Bowles back in the past that was supposed to do precisely what you just said?
Yeah, but it was not designed properly. First, it was not statutory, which means it wasn't by law, which means that the Congress and the president didn't buy in up front, which means that they didn't have any guaranteed vote on their recommendations. Secondly, it had too high a threshold for even getting a package of recommendations. 75% of the commissioners had to agree in order to even get a package of recommendations. They didn't meet that requirement. And thirdly, and most importantly, they did zero citizen education and engagement before they came up with their proposals. That is the key to success. The people are way ahead of the politicians. I've done citizen education engagement in 97 states, two U.S. territories, and several countries overseas. They can handle the truth. They're willing to accept tough choices as if they're part of a comprehensive goal-based plan consistent with principles and values that bring people together rather than divide them apart. That's what we need to do. Simpson-Bowles did good work, but they weren't designed for success. The new proposals on the Hill address those flaws and are designed for success.
All right. Are you saying that there is legislation pending now that viewer might even call their elected representative and say, think about this, support this, et cetera? Talk to us about that.
Well, there's bipartisan legislation that's been introduced both in the Senate and the House. The Senate version is called the Fiscal Stability Act. It was introduced by Senators Manchin and Romney. There's a House version of that bill by a different name. There is also a bipartisan piece of legislation. They are substantially similar in nature, and I'm hoping that what will end up happening is that they will be attached, that legislation will be attached, to either one of the appropriations bills, or if we have to extend a continuing resolution another time as a condition to extend that continuing resolution. We need to recognize reality. We are an imprudent, unsustainable, immoral course, and it's going to take a special process in order to get us where we need to be, and this is the way to go.
All right. Now, you mentioned Senators Manchin and Romney, neither of which now is running for re-election. So
right.
What does that do in the Senate? I mean, are there other people who will step up? I shouldn't have some other co-sponsors, but realistically, because those two are dropping out, what do you think the chances are?
Well, I think they're pretty good because the Speaker of the House and the Chairman of the House Budget Committee are both for this legislation. The legislation is going to have to get pushed by the House. The Senate's not going to push it. But if the House passes this legislation, I think the Senate will go along. And by the way, number three, the third element.
Yes.
Is we've got to have that constitutional amendment. And we can come back to that if you want. But, you know,
well,
can't find the next.
Yeah, I want you to talk about that right now, because one of the public policy issues that came up a few years ago was the so-called Article 5 Convention of States. And I think we did a program on it, but it's been a while. So educate that viewer on what you're talking about, what the process is, and why you think it is so important.
Well, first, one Congress can't bind the next Congress. The debt ceiling is a dismal failure. Past statutory approaches to impose fiscal responsibility have not stood the test of time. The only thing that can bind current and future Congresses is a constitutional amendment. There's two ways to get one. The old-fashioned way, two-thirds of the House and two-thirds of the Senate pass something. They send it to the states. Three-quarters have to ratify it. But the founders were very smart. They envisioned that at some point in time in the future, Congress could be so out of touch and out of control, or they could have such a fundamental conflict of interest that they wouldn't address one or more issues that needed to be addressed, and therefore the states needed to have the ability to do it in lieu of the Congress. And if two-thirds of the states file an application to the Congress for a convention of states to propose one or more amendments, not a constitutional convention, only to propose one or more amendments, then the Congress shall, non-discretionary ministerial responsibility, set the date and place for that convention. As far back as 1979, that was met, and the Congress has failed to act. It is irresponsible. It is unconstitutional. We need to right that wrong. And by the way, Dennis, since 1979, debt has gone up from less than $1 trillion to $34 trillion, and the value of the dollar has declined over 80%.
Yeah. Well, the value of the dollar has declined 98% since the Federal Reserve was formed in 1913 as well. That's a whole nother issue on inflation. But you're exactly right that nothing has happened. But if that's the case, I mean, even if you had a, say, a successful convention and you narrowed it down to that one or two amendments, because the concern, of course, was it would become like the Articles of Confederation, which we were going to redo in 1787 and end up being a new constitution. So you're working on that as well, correct?
And we, yes, but we have a safeguard. The safeguard is in 1979, of the 39 applications, 30 were fiscal responsibility only. High watermark was 83, 40 applications, 32 fiscal responsibility only. In a convention of states to propose amendments, one state, one vote. Therefore, a majority of the states want fiscal responsibility only, which means the leadership of the convention can rule anything else out of order. Okay. We want a single issue convention, fiscal responsibility only, proof of concept. If that works, then you can consider it for other things like term limits, campaign finance, or whatever.
Dave, thank you so much. I mean, as always, you're a fountain of information and somebody who stood tall, and I hope you all the success in the world. Now, you can forget about climate change, immigration, woke culture, the welfare warfare state that America has become. If this issue is not solved and solved soon, you will not escape with your financial well-being intact. So you need to immediately contact your congressman, demand action on this issue. Yes, taxes will probably need to increase and expenditures must be reduced. But when they are, you may have folks who get money now marching in the streets to protect what they have. Be brave, be educated, check McQuestion TV for important topics, and follow us on social media to get the best perspectives on things that matter with people who care.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.